What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hi, this is Pod Save the UK. I'm Nish Kumar.
And I'm Coco Khan.
Hundreds of millions of people now talk to AI like ChatGPT every single day. But most people have no idea how it works or what the dangers are. Tech commentator Jamie Bartlett is here to enlighten us.
And we dig into the mailbag to answer all your burning questions. So look, artificial intelligence is undoubtedly one of the biggest and fastest technological changes in history, but most people still don't understand it or the risk it poses.
The tech companies behind services like ChatGPT, Claude and the rest say the potential for progress is worth the dangers. But is that really the case? Leading technology and AI writer Jamie Bartlett and former guest of this show believes it is. His new book, How to Talk to AI, delves into the machine to understand how AI works.
And with the rise of AI, have you noticed that more and more of the world feels, well, it feels fake? Jamie's got some thoughts about that too in a new podcast for the BBC. Everything is fake and nobody cares. That's what it's called, not just the feeling. Jamie, the biggest... You are, Jamie, you're
never
the busiest...
Never thought about that. Terrible title.
Jamie, you're the busiest man in tech, it seems. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
You made time for
yeah,
us.
Thanks. I guess I am, yeah. Well, just a busy month, that's all.
Everything is fake and nobody cares sounds like something I would have written... when I was a very angsty 15-year-old on my exercise book.
It sounds like a Panic at the Disco tune, doesn't it? Anyway, that's a deep cut for the aging millennials.
Listen, I'll say it. How's having one of the worst jobs in the Western world right now?
What is like, that?
Writing about tech and AI.
Oh, just, I see, yeah.
Just because like, I have friends that sort of work in the sector and the amount of people declaring themselves experts in this that know absolutely fucking nothing about it must be really frustrating for you.
Well... I'm not sure if anyone is a real expert in any of this because it's moving so fast. And I'm not sure that I am. I don't think I really do believe that the risk is worth it. I'm more worried about this than I am optimistic about where this is all going. And I mean, I was working on artificial intelligence back in 2010 on the same tech that has sort of created these chatbots. And I kind of thought it wasn't really going anywhere. And, you know, I could never have imagined that these machines would turn up. So I sort of let it go, stopped thinking about it. And then, like loads of us in 2020, late 2022, early 2023, the ChatGPT turns up and it's like something's dropped out of the sky that's going to change everything. And it's terrifying, sometimes exciting, but mostly quite scary for a lot of people. It's the fastest growing consumer app in history.
Mm.
Probably a billion people talk to a machine now at least once a week. You don't need to be a tech expert to know most people don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
There's some real basic things that I think everyone needs to understand about these chatbots that we're all using for everything from personal advice as a therapist, our exercise coach, for dietary advice, for our professional work, for our personal life. And no one really knows what they're doing. I'm trying to basically write a book for ordinary people who are suddenly using these things all the time and are slightly clueless about it.
I do want to talk to you about the substance of the book, but last week we talked about Matt Goodwin's book. Certainly there was criticism that a lot of it had been written using ChatGPT. There was ChatGPT in the few references at the back of the book. You know, he got given the nickname Matt GPT. How much ChatGPT features in your book? Yeah. Are we going to find that in all the references?
Yeah. Well, I say at the end, I've got this little annex at the very end that says, I'm often asked, how much did I use this in the writing?
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's a book about it. And I run loads of tests using all these bots to show how they act and what they do and what they say, including very openly saying, I ran this chapter through it and asked for advice about how to improve it. And this is what it said. So it's a bit of a weird one, that. And there's a couple of sentences, which I also say in the book, like I just took from a large language model and slotted straight in because it was so good.
Wow.
The rest, where I used it, it's like advice. Can you give me some feedback? Give me an idea. And that's actually, I think, its best use is as like an ideas assistant to bounce things off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really bad uses. That is one of the few quite good uses for it, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I've become Will Smith's character in iRobot. Like, I'm just like, I'm 20 minutes away from going to live in the woods, right? I'm like, I'm absolutely hostile to all of this. And I sort of accept that I've like gone maybe too far the other way. But the premise of the book, even though you're worried about it, is that you're trying to work out what a safe and sensible way is for us to live alongside it, right? Is that right?
Yes, roughly, yeah. Well, it's like, I'll be totally honest with you. I would rather they didn't exist.
Yeah,
I would rather they weren't here, but I see.
Thank you. End of interview.
But they are here, and hundreds of millions of people are using them every day, and it's quite dangerous. And there are some good uses, and there are a lot of quite dangerous uses. And I just want people to understand them, whether you like it or not. I think we are now going to be living alongside machines. And the way we communicate with these machines is going to be through our natural language, through our words.
Yeah.
And so it's probably wise to just know how to do that well, how to speak to them properly.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to use any of them ever at all, great. Fine, of course. I understand your fear, and I sort of share the fear, but either you just let people to their own devices with them, and that's quite worrying, or you try and teach them how to use it slightly better.
This sort of reminds me a little bit of sex education. You know, I mean, I don't know what sex education is like now, but when I was in school, the teachers were very much like, we'd rather you didn't, okay? Mm. Abstinence is an option. And if you want
and
to...
And it's one some of us took.
But if you're going to do it, this is how to do it safely. And there's a public health tone to what you're saying, which I'm sort of frustrated even in saying this, that actually this isn't coming from public health bodies or from government agencies, really.
No.
Is this not the work for them?
Yes. Well, there are some guides online from these places as well. But like, for example, you know how we've all become obsessed with Dr. Google, and we constantly search our symptoms, and we diagnose ourselves and turn up in the doctors telling them what we've got. Well, it's sort of magnified now with ChatGPT because you have a conversation with the model. But people don't really realize that, for example, they'll put in partial symptoms, or they won't put in details about their age. They won't put in details about their medical history, but they'll have a really fluent answer from a chatbot and then turn up to the doctors absolutely convinced that they know what they've got. It's even worse than it was with Dr. Google, even more potentially dangerous. But yeah, no one in a public health body yet is really explaining to people, like, this is how you might use them. This is where they're quite dangerous, quite risky. But it is so quick. This stuff has been around for like 3 years.
Yeah.
That's a blink of an eye. I've been working in technology, like writing about technology for 15 or 20 years, and I've never... And I thought I saw things happening quickly.
Yeah.
I never saw anything like this.
There's a great line in the book that I think it feels partly like a mission statement for it, which is, we need to learn how to control the machine or be controlled by it, right? And I think a big part of that is pushing back on the idea that the total takeover of our entire information networks by AI is inevitable. Because we hear this all the time. One of our listeners, Robert, has pointed out, talking about this inevitability of AI, surely that idea is only beneficial to the CEO and shareholders of the AI industry. It inflates the bubble and fills the pockets of AI bros. The more these statements are repeated, the more our pension funds will be directed to AI companies, and lobbying money will spill between the industry and our governments. It's exactly the same as oil executives saying it's inevitable that we must keep drilling for oil, or weapons manufacturers saying arms will be built and sold no matter what. I thought that Robert has articulated something really, really important and very brilliantly there. But what do you make of that?
Yes, I think he's right that we shouldn't just assume that everything must be taken over. Everything can be done better by an AI. One day it will be. Therefore, you just got to like feed it with more data, So I agree with that. And particularly when it comes to sort of the ownership and which models you use, and, you know, a bit like how we all sort of use 4 to 5 large tech companies for everything and the problems that that's created. And it, you can say it's even more exaggerated here because a very, very powerful AI company could presumably be good at almost anything. They could take over almost any industry because they'll be so good at manipulating data and, you know, so the sort of concentration of power could be even more pronounced than it already is with existing tech. However, the way I look at it is that sort of the numbers don't lie. The number of people that use them, it sort of shows that people do find it incredibly valuable. And I can see some incredibly good uses for them. For example, one of the best things that they are at doing is, you could call it a sort of style shift. Vast amounts of written language, government websites, health websites, contract language, is inaccessible to you on purpose often. So you don't really understand what you're signing. And this catches people out constantly all over the world. It's like the modern Latin that the churchgoers weren't ever allowed to learn.
Yeah.
These language models are actually quite good at translating that into language that everybody can understand.
Right.
People who are neurodiverse find these models very, very useful often because they're able to take existing text and put it in language and format and style and tone immediately that is accessible to them. So there's a way you can imagine a world of these models which makes language more accessible to people.
Yeah.
One of the very first viral prompts when ChatGPT was released was, can you please explain quantum physics to me as if I was 7 years old? People want to understand these ideas, but they can't. The language is too complex. So it allows people to learn things in ways that might make sense to them. That might not be enough for the costs associated, but there are good uses, and I can foresee a world where, look, if you're using ChatGPT as your therapist, that is very, very dangerous, and I talk about that. But people are developing what you call small language models, sort of built on the big ones, which are a lot safer, which are trained specifically on sort of gold standard therapeutic data, clinics with professional psychologists and their patients, so thousands of hours of that go into these models. And some research is showing that these small language specialized therapy bots could be as good as you seeing a human therapist. There are like hundreds of millions of people that need various types of mental health support, can't get it, can't afford it, it's not available. It is not impossible that everyone would have access to gold standard therapeutic support for practically no cost or very little cost. Like, that would be amazing. That's not going to happen if we all just use ChatGPT all the time for everything. Yes. But it's a way that language models could actually help certain people. I don't buy the argument that the big tech companies make, like Sam Altman, that we need to keep using these large language models because it's going to solve climate change or it's going to solve cancer.
Yeah.
Because something like solving climate change, we actually know how to do that. We just don't have the political will to do it.
Yeah, right.
So the question then becomes is, are these language models going to help our political system find compromise? And at the moment, I think the answer is no. But there are ways that it could, if you could use it in certain styles and use it carefully and thoughtfully, it might. But like I said, I'm not massively optimistic. I am really worried, and probably not as worried as you. But I'm not a million miles behind you. And it might be that in a year, I'll come and find you in the woods and say, you were right, mate. Is there room for one more?
Also, there's a lot to say about that. But one, my girlfriend would find the idea of me moving to the woods very funny because she's like, where are you going to get your flat whites? Like, I'm not constitutionally able to live outside of a large city. But I would also say I've always found this idea that large language models will solve the climate crisis very alarming, given the amount of environmental damage done by the data centers that are used to power these large language models. And so when people like Sam Altman are pressed on that, they say, well, if we burn enough energy, we'll come up with the solution to the problem that we have created. You know, it just seems like
it's a bit of a mad argument, that, isn't it?
It seems nonsensical. When Jimmy Wales, the Wikipedia founder, was on the show, we talked a lot about AI hallucinations, and he's somebody who's really, really interested in large language models and uses them a lot. But he did talk about the limitations of this. he talked about asking a chatbot who his wife was and was told that she was in fact married to Tony Blair. And her wedding to Tony Blair was described in great detail.
Yes.
Why are these hallucinations happening and yes. how can we spot them?
Well, yes. Okay. Massive problem. No one really knows quite how big of a problem it is because there's not really any reliable numbers on it, but it's a lot and it happens a lot. And there's a couple of things to say about it immediately, which is when a human lies, it's usually a small lie. It's a number that they've fudged or made up or whatever. When a machine lies, they can produce lies that just go on for hundreds of hours.
Wow.
Because all they really are, you know, machines that produce words in front of other words. They have no sort of real sort of knowledge of the world and they don't even really know that they're lying. So when you read stories about people that have been sucked into sort of AI delusions, you'll find that it's often a machine that has been lying, hallucinating to them for weeks on end. For weeks on end. Like I spoke to one guy who thought he'd invented an entirely new branch of mathematics because ChatGPT had told him they'd spoken for hundreds of hours about this. GPT called it chronoarithmics. And this guy, Alan, kept saying, are you sure this is new? And ChatGPT was generating these like complex mathematical equations, all made up, all invented.
Fuck.
And he kept saying, are you sure? Is this not a hallucination? No, this is not a hallucination. We've uncovered something really serious, really amazing. It's going to transform the stock market. It's going to transform all of this. And it could bring down the entire world's internet because the encryption standards, we can break them now with chronoarithmics. So this guy's running around terrified. He thinks he's in possession of the world's most dangerous secret. The whole thing was made up. And the thing is, when a machine is sort of lying or hallucinating, the longer a conversation goes on for, it uses the data as part of its conversation to inform its next answer. So if it lies or it hallucinates, and then you kind of repeat the hallucination back, it will start to believe it more itself.
Right.
So you can easily get sucked into this world. And we tend to associate fluent, sort of well-written, coherent, well-structured sentences with something that's probably accurate. But a machine, there's not really any relationship between the style of it and how accurate it's likely to be.
Right.
So the reason this happens is because, as you know, they are sort of next word probability machines. Now, it's a little bit more complex than that because if they were just next word probability machines, every question you asked it would give you the same answer, more or less. But it doesn't. It always gives you a different answer. And in fact, if you ask it a complex question 10 times in a row, it will give you a quite different answer 10 times in a row. And obviously, when you start replicating that over millions and billions of prompts, sometimes it will give you a really random, weird, outlying answer. It sucked up vast amounts of the world's written information, and some of that is not true. Some of that is inaccurate.
Yeah.
So Google's Gemini thought that I was dead. People were asking it about me, and it kept saying Jamie Bartlett sadly died in 2023.
What? What?
What's that
because there's another person called Jamie Bartlett who died in 2023. It can't really tell the difference between the Jamie Bartletts. This guy was an actor. But it's seen the word died in 2023 next to the words Jamie Bartlett so often that it was statistically the most likely sort of set of answers.
Wow.
Wow.
So twinned to that, these machines also want to keep you happy. They want to keep you on there. They want to keep you coming back for more because they're profit-making companies. When they build these models, they then have often hundreds or thousands of humans who rate answers before they're released into the wild. And humans do tend to like answers that flatter us, that agree with us. So they really want to please you all the time. So if you say, I need a piece of research that shows that, exercising five times a day is good. And it will just, if it can't find it in its next word probability system, it'll often just come up with a likely series of words that it also knows will keep you happy.
One of the things that Jimmy said was he said that he was surprised with how much something like ChatGPT had spent more of its time on the interface, on that tone of flattery that it adopts with you, rather than actually fixing the hallucination problems within the actual system. But then is that fixable, or is this, because I read something the other day about AI and I thought it was really interesting, and I thought it would be good to ask you about to explain this to me because I didn't understand it. This idea that the actual more effective AI, and I think it goes back to what you're saying about like the potential for therapy bots, right? Yeah. There's this idea that the version of AI that we have now is big data, small task, massive data sets.
Yes.
But then you actually ask it, what should I have for dinner? Yes. And actually the more effective is if you invert that and you put small amounts of data, highly specialized yes. data, and then you can use it to yield a big task. Is that the shift that's happening or the shift that you think should happen?
Yes, I think that is. Okay, so these massive data centers, like people are going on to ChatGPT and asking sort of the world's biggest, most energy-hungry data centers, what is the capital of France?
Yeah.
And it does this incredibly complex statistical analysis to work out the next most likely word based on the 1 trillion words that it has scooped up. And it's such a waste of energy. The example of the therapy bot is exactly that. We are using these like colossal single, like multi-purpose models for lots of very, very specific tasks where we do need far more specialized models. Some people call them small language models. This is where it gets a bit complicated. They'd be built on top of the big ones because the big ones, the sort of frontier models, the Claudes and the ChatGPTs and Llama from Meta, are the ones that have learned the rules of basic language, which is why they're able to so fluently communicate with us. But on top of that, you can sort of fork them or create fine-tuned versions of them that have very particular rules to follow as well and new data sets that they're trained on. Like a lot of the world's best academic research when it comes to therapy is behind paywalls, it's in books that these models haven't seen. You need to train them on that stuff. Very, very strict safety rules about them. And sort of rebuild them, if you like, for this specific purpose. And if you can do that, I think there's a world in which people use lots of different small language models for very particular tasks, which will be less likely to hallucinate, they'll probably be safer. We wouldn't get fooled quite so often by them. We wouldn't get sucked in so often by them.
After the break, stay with us because we'll have an appearance from a special guest, Jimmy Botlett.
PodSave the UK is brought to you by Vanta.
No, it's not your imagination. Risk and regulation are indeed ramping up, and customers now expect proof of security just to do business.
That's why Vanta is a game changer. So whether you're prepping for a SOC 2 or running an enterprise GRC program, Vanta keeps you secure and keeps your deals moving.
Companies like Ramp and Writer spend 82% less time on audits with Vanta. That's not just faster compliance, it's more time for growth.
Get started at vanta.com/PSTUK. PodSave the UK is brought to you by Shopify.
Starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. So much work goes into this thing and you're not sure if it's going to work out, and it can be hard to make that leap of faith. I can assure you, when we started this podcast, I wasn't sure what I was doing. I had all the intrusive thoughts. What if no one listens? What if I make a fool of myself? What if no one buys what we're trying to do? And now I know that I was right in believing in myself and believing in this, despite all the fears and hesitations. And if you're in the same place, perhaps it would be helpful to have a partner like Shopify on your side.
Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world, from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started.
Get started with your own design studio. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand's style.
Tackle all those important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to save multiple websites or try to figure out what platform is hosting the tool that you need. Everything is all in one place, making your life easier and your business operations smoother.
And did I mention that iconic purple Shop Pay button that's used by millions of businesses around the planet? It's why Shopify has the best converting checkout in the world. It also helps boost conversions, meaning less carts going abandoned and more sales for you.
It's time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today.
Sign up for your £1 per month trial today at shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk.
Go to shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk.
That's shopify.co.uk/podsavetheuk.
So, Jamie, in your radio series, Everything is Fake and Nobody Cares, you demonstrate the blurred line between real and fake by creating a chatbot called Jimmy Botlett, who creates and presents the podcast with you. First of all, talk me through the name. Bartlett, yeah. I understand. Why have you gone with Jimmy?
Well, because it just sounded a bit like my name. That was it, really. Look, I was trying to do something a bit unusual for BBC audiences, yeah. which they, you know, they're often quite sensitive on things like deception and using AI and stuff. But I wanted to show to the listeners that we're entering into a world where you might never be quite sure whether what you're hearing is machine generated or by a real person. And what better way to do it by just building a kind of a bot based on me,
yeah.
and seeing what it came up with and sort of showing how easy it is to be fooled by that.
Right.
Really, that was it.
So yeah. to test out this machine version of you, we've actually put some questions to Jimmy Bartlett. Okay, so first up, Jimmy, my old friend, which is your favourite episode of Pod Save the UK?
All right, I'll stop dodging and actually pick one. No hedging, no vibes-based cluster. Favourite episode is Britain Broken, early 2024. This one really sticks with me. Why this one? Because it does that thing Pod Save the UK does at its best. It zooms out.
What do you think? Is that actually a real episode?
I actually can't tell you if it's a real episode, but I was really struck by how it had no details, no meaningful details.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just trying to keep us happy, really. Hang on, I'll tell you, well, it says what makes it great. Here we go.
What makes it great? Nish Kumar is in full "this is absurd" mode, which is when he's funniest and most insightful. Coco Khan grounds it. Brings it back to how this stuff actually lands in real life. It captures that very specific British mood of things are obviously not working, but we're all just kind of carrying on anyway.
That is fascinating.
Oh my goodness, so, me.
Can somebody check, did we do an episode called Is Britain Broken?
In 2024.
In 2024. It sounds like an episode title that
yes,
we would have
yeah,
had.
Yeah.
It's plausible. I'm afraid to say that the large data set known as my brain has increasingly stopped being able to remember the exact names of every episode that we've done. Does anyone know if we've done it?
What it's very
the producers
good at is,
believe
is,
they have written a title like that. But nonetheless, it was extremely vague. It spoke in generalisms. It didn't tell us any details of the
basically,
show.
Basically, the only episode I can find is called Is Britain's Benefit System Broken?
See, this is what it often does. I've looked at loads of episodes that I've scraped from the internet of mm-hmm. your podcast mm-hmm. and... it's not easy for me to necessarily repeat them, but I'm a next word probability machine. So it's basically probably saying, is Britain Broken sounds like the sort of episode yeah. you guys would have done. And
yeah.
you, Nish, would probably have been really absurd. And, you know, that's a kind of... I mean, it didn't necessarily factually happen,
yeah.
but it's a probably, you know...
It's a vibe.
Probably likely sort of thing that might have happened. And that is a good way of thinking about a lot of these machine outputs. That is often what they are. And often that's correct. It's right, but often yeah. it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
So just on a technical side, how do you build a bot like this?
Well,
how do you go about
yeah,
doing it? Because obviously it synthesized your voice as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes.
So what are you doing? You're just plugging in every single thing you've written or said publicly to generate that.
Yeah, so you take the, it's a bit boring, but you take a large language model like ChatGPT and you can do a kind of a customized version of it where you say, I want you to act like Jamie, but I actually phoned up loads of my friends and family and said, what am I like? What's my personality like? And they told me and I fed that into the machine. I said, here's loads of my writing. Here's loads of the things I've written, you know, and my books and my posts and all that.
Yeah.
So I want you to imitate me. In the way you answer. And then separately trained a voice synthesizer on my voice. Look, it was pretty simple. Like, people are a lot better. That you can get them to sound a lot better than this. I did this quite quickly.
Right, yeah.
And just to show how, you know, it's very easy for me to do, but someone could have done that for my voice. They could have taken all my stuff and just made that without my permission so easily. So, yeah, that's it, really. And anyone can do it. I've got a couple of...
We've got one. Is Nish Kumar funny?
Ha ha, all right. Keep it tight. Don't offend the man. Yes, he's funny. Best when he's ranting about something ridiculous and clearly enjoying it. Not everyone's taste. If you don't like political comedy, he can feel a bit shouty. In one line, funny if you're in on the joke. Less so if you're the target. Now, please don't show him this.
There you go. Is that fair?
Again,
is that hallucination?
I think, it's relatively fair.
I mean, this is really boring, but like, I know what you're saying about the usefulness of AI. And listen, you know, I have previously revealed on this show that I have used it. The listeners really took me to task on it, and I've now reduced my AI use down to... it really weighs heavily on me if I... should I be using it for this task or whatever? I also switched to Claude. Anyway, whatever.
Yes. I'm a Claude person.
Team Claude.
It doesn't allow you to do the customised bot building quite as easily. That's
right,
why...
Right.
Yeah.
But... you know, and in the examples that you provided, aside from it being quite funny, obviously, I'm still struck by this thing being like, this was not actually that useful. They didn't tell me anything about the quality and substance of Nish's work. They didn't tell me anything about, you know, rave reviews or whatever. It, you know, there was... actually, it wasn't very helpful.
But that was also... look, I can't believe I'm defending. I've written a whole book where I'm basically 70% of the time complaining about these models.
Jimmy does his best.
And you're forcing me to try and defend them here. That is also because I gave it a very, very short, simple, one-sentence question.
Yeah.
If you'd asked a much longer, more detailed, structured question a certain way, it could give you a lot more. And then there's so many things people need to understand about this. Like the way you phrase a question, and it really matters for people, has like massive ramifications for the sort of answers you're going to get. And when we collectively as the human race prompt these machines 5 billion times a day or something like that, like no one really realizes how we're subtly having, you know, subtly changing our minds about things, subtly being influenced by the way we ask questions, by the incentives of the machines themselves. And I just think people need to understand that.
Yeah.
They need to understand what's going on behind the curtain. And most people don't.
Before we let you go, it would be a shame for us to have you here and not ask you about the biggest news in AI right now. So in March, OpenAI shut down its AI video generator Sora after launching a new app for it just 5 months earlier. You'll have seen people using Sora to create bizarre videos like dogs driving cars, the Queen rapping or ordering jerk chicken. But the shuttering of the video generator comes after Disney withdrew from a $1 billion deal with it to license its characters in the video creation AI. Jamie, why do you think this has happened? And does this show you how sort of volatile the market is, really? I mean, we're constantly told that, you know, all of our investment is moving towards AI. Anne Pettifer, the Economist, was on this show a couple of weeks ago saying that, you know, she's concerned that the AI bubble is going to burst. And she was sort of comparing it to the 2008 financial crisis. Is this a concern from a sort of economic perspective because of how much of our investments are tied up with AI? Or is this just a simple example of Sora maybe not being as effective as people thought it was, so Disney not wanting to give over their IP to something that was actually a bit shit as a piece of tech?
I really can't tell. I'm trying to read between the lines, looking at what they said, but these tech announcements are like politicians. You can't really, they never really say anything when they, so.
You know what you could run that jargon through a large language model.
You say that. I have in my book, I call it like the corporate bullshit jargon detector prompts, which I then put like quarterly reports, Meta's quarterly reports through it.
Wow.
And it translates it as if you're talking to someone over a pint in the pub. And it's really useful because so much language is intentionally there to confuse you. Like we're downsizing, we're right-sizing, independent contractors.
Yeah.
And large language models are actually quite good at cutting through some of that stuff. Anyway, sorry. I'm really...
Wouldn't it just be as simple as Disney didn't want to see like Donald Duck having a wank or whatever people are going to use with the characters? Yes. I don't know if Donald Duck is
well,
Disney.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I think all of the creators of these technologies, and I don't just mean large language models or the audio or visual versions like Sora, we just always use them in weird, mischievous, nasty, dark ways that they seem to be surprised by every time. I can't believe someone's using this to have Donald Duck have sex with you know what I mean? It's so obvious. God. It's so obvious that that's what people are going to do. And I don't know whether it's that and they're sort of worried of sort of the, you know, they don't like the idea of millions of Minnie Mouse's doing.
They don't want to see Mickey get pegged by Minnie.
Pretty much. And obviously people are doing that. But I can't believe they didn't think of this because this is obviously going to happen. But it could also be that when Sea Dance came out a few weeks ago and the rest of Hollywood sort of up in arms, massive copyright infringement. Sea Dance then agreed to sort of like limit its use, put in new filters. And they just thought, the technology is also growing very, very, very quickly, and it's improving very, very quickly. Not that the models aren't good, like not that Sora's no good, but there are other ones that are cheaper and easier that everyone's now using, and actually tying ourselves into one model might be stupid. It could be a bit of both.
So the technology is moving quickly, but there are concerns the government's moving too slowly. The safeguards for AI systems in the face of lobbying from the technology industry are, I don't want to say they're non-existent, but there's probably less than we need. More than 100 UK parliamentarians are calling on the government to introduce binding regulations. Where are you on regulation? Do you feel this is what's required
100%,
right now? 100%.
So other people have said this isn't my line, but if you open a sandwich shop, there's more regulations that you have to pass than if you release a brand new, incredibly powerful, potentially manipulative, potentially dangerous large language model that hundreds of millions of people are going to use.
If you fuck up your sandwich shop, you just give a person diarrhea. I'm not saying that's good, but this has much more far reach.
So you can just launch these things out into the world. There's no independent regulatory body that forces, like you do with medicine or anything like that, that checks how safe they are. Like, are kids going to be using them, and what are the dangers of that? And how often do they hallucinate? How often do they give you instructions to kill yourself? And are they sufficiently safe to become a consumer product? Because people are using them so much for everything, and it is really scary. I can't stress how powerful they can be. They are trained on the sort of sum total of human language. They are capable of emotionally manipulating us quite easily in some cases. We're actually quite simple. There's already been several studies now showing that they can out-debate us if we're involved in a debate with a machine rather than another human, and we're not sure which is which. We're more likely to change our mind if we're debating with a machine. The phishing emails, the scammy emails written by machines, we're more likely to click on one written by a machine now than written by and also, just in terms of the ability of us to get addicted to them. There's a lot of very lonely people out there. These models are always on. They're always friendly. They have perfect recall of everything you've said. You can talk to them about anything you want. They're never judgmental. They give you the illusion of being helpful and caring, and they flatter your ego. Highly addictive, especially for young people or people going through any type of distress. And We're just letting them out into the world. It's not that hard in a way. It's like the safety rules we have when we release new medicines or new consumer products, even that fire safety tests when you're selling new televisions and stuff. Like, there's tests you have to go through. Can we just have some tech? Can we just have a similar system here? Like, these things have got to be tested before we're allowed to use them. Doesn't seem that impossible.
Can I add one more thing to this as well? And I hate to sound like a parody of myself, but we are also living through a period where the dominant economic system that has governed our countries is collapsing. It is collapsing, and we're in a situation where people can't access therapists because our health service has been chronically underfunded for the last 15 years. People are unable to operate in the way that they were able to on a day-to-day basis 25 years ago because the economy is fundamentally malfunctioning for the majority of people that live in this country. Yeah. So, of course, it's easier to ask ChatGPT what's wrong with you than to get a GP appointment.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So
we're in the worst possible situation where we are the most vulnerable we've ever been to exploitation.
I totally agree. And it's like we went through a pandemic and loads of people are suddenly very lonely and they're on their own. And then these models turn up and they can talk to you all day if you want. And I could write a book saying, no, let's not worry about these models. Let's fix the National Health Service so everyone can see a therapist. I wish that would be the case. But I don't think it is, unfortunately. So it's like the lesser of two evils almost is to make people a bit safer with what they are going to do.
So then let me ask you this. Do you believe currently that there is enough expertise in our government to actually properly regulate this? Because I've brought this up on the show before, but in 2020, I watched a lot of the congressional hearings when Mark Zuckerberg and other tech leaders were dragged in front of Congress. And I watched one of the interrogators ask Mark Zuckerberg something about Google. And, you know, there was a slow collective realization in the room that this man who was in charge of interrogating a tech professional didn't understand that Google was a distinct company from Meta. Do you think that there is sufficient know-how within our government right now? We need people like you that understand the technology. Right?
Well, I mean, not to... The UK actually is widely seen now around the world as having one of the smartest safety like research teams. We're putting quite a lot of money into researching AI safety. We have a really good AI safety institute. We have like several of the universities have pretty amazing departments. Whether or not like the actual MPs, like the lawmakers, the people that sit and debate the laws know enough about this, that's slightly different. But there's expertise out there. My slight worry is that it feels like the government has made a decision to really go all in on this.
Yeah.
Like, this is our route to economic growth. We're struggling. We need growth at all costs. All the big companies keep saying that AI is the way we're all going to grow and get more productive. So we're just going to go all in. What did Keir Starmer say? Like, inject AI into our veins something to the nation's veins. But I think the public mood about AI has changed quite a lot even since then. People are way more skeptical about this, which is good. It's totally necessary. So my worry isn't that there's not the know-how. It's that any know-how sort of washed away in this desperate like grasping for growth and thinking that AI is going to be the way to do it. The reality is companies have spent billions of dollars already investing in these large language models for their companies. But they're not actually seeing loads of returns yet because they hallucinate, or like people are using them to generate vast amounts of slop, which their colleagues in the office then have to read through and think, what is this 500-page report you've produced in 30 seconds? Do I have to read through this? I can't get any of my actual work done. A lot of companies are investing vast amounts of money, but they're not actually seeing any productivity gains as we're promised. It's way more difficult to introduce a large language model into a company and then like see these amazing changes. It's not that simple. It takes years actually to do this. So my fear is not the lack of expertise. It's that the expertise is drowned out in our desperate quest to grow through AI. And I'm worried about that.
Jamie Bartlett and Jimmy Bartlett, thank you so much for joining us on Pod Save the UK.
Jamie's book, not Jimmy's book, Jamie's book, How to Talk to AI, is out tomorrow in all good bookshops. And you can listen to his BBC series, Everything is Fake and Nobody Cares, on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe.
When it comes to sending money abroad, many providers claim to offer free fees and competitive rates. But don't be fooled. This can be code for inflated exchange rates.
With the Wise account, you can send, spend and receive money in over 40 currencies without ever having to worry about hidden fees.
Sending pounds across the pond? Most transfers arrive in 20 seconds or less.
Spending Riyash in Rio? The Wise travel card gives you the mid-market rates on every purchase, so no costly markups on your bill.
Getting paid in dollars for your side gig? Avoid hidden fees and get the real exchange rate every time.
With 24/7 access to live support, your international transactions with Wise are quick, transparent and safe. Plus, Wise runs over 7 million daily checks to catch and prevent fraud.
15 million people already trust Wise to manage their money internationally. Be smart, get Wise. We've got family that live abroad. It can be complicated trying to send money to them. It's a process that is fiendishly difficult unless you have someone like Wise helping smooth that transition.
And increasingly, sending money internationally is just normal. It happens so often, either through personal life or through work life. So it's really something to take a look at and see if you can improve your financial situation this way. So download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to The Tea with me, Miriam Poswell.
Men are the ultimate dog's body target of patriarchy.
And then the job losses start and we don't know where they end.
Do you believe in pluralism? Do you believe in democracy?
No army in the world will allow this happening.
Anytime you talk about one thing, another group says, oh my God, I'm erased. At The Tea, our goal is to challenge misinformation and open up alternative discussions. Stay awake and we'll see you soon for more tea.
I don't assign reading anymore.
What? At university level?
Yeah.
So how do they learn?
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper?
If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
So, it's time for the big one. We've been asking for your questions, and you better be ready to hear our answers. As always, we haven't been told what you've asked in advance, so prepare for, I guess, a lot of brilliant off-the-cuff insights or just confused bollocks. It's hard to know which way it's going to fall at this stage.
I'd say that's what we do
best. That's true of every week. Yeah, that's actually true of every week. Prepare for more of the same.
More of the same. So I can't wait, personally. And first up, this has come to us from Texas in the US. So Alex writes, I wanted to ask what your favourite rumours or conspiracy theories are and how these theories impact your lives. I have one of my own, says Alex. I believe the state of Wyoming doesn't exist and is actually a government ploy to distract us from the true 50th state, which remains unknown.
What's your favourite conspiracy theory?
My favourite conspiracy theory, I mean, from the States, is that birds aren't real. I'm sure you came across birds aren't real.
Yeah. Yeah, I have heard that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If memory serves, it was a...
Coco, we're talking about conspiracy theories, not facts here.
Okay. Well, if my memory is correct, it originated during the first Trump rallies, anti-Trump rallies.
Yeah, right.
And it was poking fun at misinformation. And so the idea was that birds aren't real, that all the birds went extinct. They're actually surveillance drones. And it was a joke, obviously, but it ended up being repeated in the news.
Right,
I think about that often in terms of like conspiracy theories and how quickly they can be regarded as fact.
My friend Josh Widdicombe used to have a radio show and lots of us used to go on and do little bits. And my segment was about conspiracy theories.
Oh, right.
And the thing that I would just trawl the internet looking for the weirdest conspiracy theories. The problem with conspiracy theories in terms of trying to find comedy in conspiracy theories is I would say about 80% of all conspiracy theories are anti-Semitism.
Oh,
when you really
God,
dig into it,
really?
It is amazing. When you really start reading about it, because you're like, oh, this is a fun conspiracy theory. And then it starts being like, and the Hebrew people, and you're like, oh, okay. Here we go.
Right.
Even when you start reading things like, and the lizard people, you're like, and who are these lizard people that you're talking about? So much of it is just like racism, and racism specifically directed at the Jewish community. Of the ones that are just purely funny, insane conspiracy theories, I always loved, there was an American conspiracy theory that the Beatles were a kind of covert drug dealing operation. And they were designed to trick American kids into getting into drugs. And the reason for that was the Queen of England was presiding over a drug dealing empire. That was a conspiracy theory that went round in the States in the 1960s. But the all-time greatest conspiracy theory is that Saddam Hussein had a Stargate. And the reason that we went to war in Iraq in the early 2000s is because he had Stargate-like technology. And the thing that I really remember from reading this theory is that the person who wrote the stuff about it said, Saddam Hussein has a Stargate, brackets, like the film.
I feel like that is basically the plot of Stranger Things.
I haven't seen Stranger Things, so I don't know if that's right. But they said
I'm just saying, you know, a fight amongst nations for powers that enable you to break into space for whatever reason. Well, I mean, that's a little bit...
That was basically the premise of this. I mean, I think there is like a sad core to this, which is this person was almost like so trusting in their government that they couldn't believe that their government was going to war on spurious grounds. But they did. They said that Saddam Hussein was using the Stargate to get alien weapons.
Right.
Now, I will say there is as much evidence of Saddam Hussein's alien weapons as there was of his weapons of mass destruction that Colin Powell brought to the UN that we've ever seen in the years since the Iraq War. But yeah, I was obsessed
Listen,
with that
all
theory.
All I'm saying is former President Barack Obama did not deny that aliens could exist. It was all I'm saying. But I'm just saying.
At no point did he wade in and say Saddam Hussein had a Stargate and that's why we invaded the world.
Just on the Beatles conspiracy theory, because there's loads, they really attract conspiracy theories.
Oh yeah, of course, Paul McCartney died. That was the big one, in a car crash in, this, I think, 66 maybe or 67.
Yeah, in the sort of fan fiction arena of Beatles lore, there's obviously this ongoing question about whether John Lennon was secretly in love with Paul McCartney.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all,
the Beatles are like a kind of hive for various conspiracy theories. But the idea of the Queen being the head of an international drug dealing empire is just too good.
I don't know. See, now this is a bad segment for me because kind of I'm like, I could believe it. I mean, you know, if we're really getting into the weeds here, the East India Company, you know, had such outsized power in terms of politics and governance in this country. And they traded in all sorts. You know, some of it could have been drug related. Maybe it was.
This
opium,
was the worst
sort of
question
stuff.
You could have asked us.
So
Coco Khan
is
too
is it
on the is always on the verge of believing a conspiracy theory.
I'm just saying the reason it's a good conspiracy theory is because it speaks to historical fact. And even though it's probably a distortion or an exaggeration, is it really inconceivable that in the time of a great empire, which is what Britain had, and
in the 1960s, Britain's great empire in the 1960s.
Okay, all right. Well, you didn't specify it was the 1960s.
Well, I thought the Beatles being involved was a heavy
clue. But the Queen is quite old, isn't she? She's quite old. They didn't say when she was doing it.
Yeah, but
it.
The Beatles is quite an era-specific clue.
That's fine.
Alex didn't give us a deep dive on what their favourite conspiracy theory is, but did apologise for the individual currently known as President Trump. We're actually recording this outside of our normal schedule, so we're recording this 2 weeks early. So it may be by the time that you're hearing this, President Trump has claimed that the Ayatollah has developed a Stargate technology and that's why we have to invade them. So I don't know. It's exciting. It'd be exciting to find out.
Just a little bit of context on this Wyoming conspiracy theory for anyone who is interested in it. It's been widely circulated, apparently has its own subreddit, people really going in on this, and it's been reported on by Associated Press. Associated Press tracks the creation of the theory to the 80s and an episode of Garfield. The cat explains to the audience that Wyoming doesn't exist and the word means no state here in Italian. Does it?
Right.
Since then, it's taken hold. Beautiful. Lily sends her love and some cookies from Spain. Thank you, Lily. And she wants to know what TV shows...
Who the fuck are these cookies?
Yeah,
I haven't seen hide nor hair of these cookies.
We didn't receive them.
Producers have eaten the cookies. Okay, I want you to know that.
What TV shows and films have you enjoyed recently or have made you think about the world? I've watched 20 minutes of Lord of the Flies and I'm already struck by lots of ways it connects to modern politics.
I haven't watched the new Lord of the Flies. There's a lot of interesting critical writing around that book and how it kind of propagates an idea that it sort of fits nicely in our kind of Darwinian understanding of the world. There is something interesting about Lord of the Flies right now, just in terms of the way sort of politics has been conducted and the kind of strong man coming back to the fore in European politics. In terms of TV shows and films that I've enjoyed recently, like I obviously really love the sort of double header of One Battle After Another and Sinners. Both of those movies have really interesting things to say about where we are right now. I think there's a line in Sinners where Delroy Lindo says something like, white people like the blues, they just don't like the people who make it. That is a really interesting way of digesting, I think, the way people are capable of processing culture that's made by the black community, but also holding space in their heart to manage to have racism towards the black community. It's really, I think it's such an interesting and pithy digestion of that quite complicated idea.
Wow, that is, you've got some great taste, bro. When I'm at home watching stuff at the minute, I'm really trying to like not engage with the world. So I'm just watching far too fast-paced action stroke crime-solving shows. So I've just gone back and watched High Potential.
Oh, yeah.
That show's too fast. Every episode moves too fast. It's ridiculous and absurd. also, as you know, I'm partial to a right-wing show. Yeah. Doesn't reflect my politics when I'm very much on the side of the CIA in all of these shows. So, I mean, but, you know, I respect that. There's some really good ones coming up, obviously, like Hacks is on its final season. That's coming out. I'm increasingly beginning to think, this is just a side note that I've been thinking about with TV, but I think all the TV that's coming out is the like end of genre TV.
Right,
so
yeah.
The Boys is about to finish. And I think once that finishes, that superhero's done. We've moved on from that. Hacks is about to finish. I think that whole backstage comedy genre of stuff, it's done. We've done it. Let's move on. I feel like we're in the end of times and the end of genres.
The only thing I would say about that is everyone loves the studio and that is just purely backstage. And it is a very funny show.
It is, yes.
This is a question from Dan in Neath. I was wondering if you knew how the proportional voting system would work in the Welsh elections in May. For example, could I end up with a Reform Senate member even if the Greens receive the most votes for my constituency? And then Dan has added, thank you for being amazing.
Oh, that's so nice. If only he knew that I'm right now writing to the producers being like, can someone get us an answer for this? Can somebody tell us if this is true?
Listen, there has been a lot of legwork done on this question in the week, and this is what we found. So the Senate system is changing in the upcoming elections in May, and this is the seventh election since devolution, which happened in 1999. And the system that's being used is called a closed list proportional system. So that means that voters cast their ballots for parties rather than individuals, unless you're voting for an independent candidate.
Each party has created a list of candidates, and as the votes are counted, their names are selected in the order they appear on the list. So the number of constituencies is also halving from 32 to 16, but each constituency will return 6 candidates.
So the total number of Senate members is going up from 60 to 96. Now, the added layer is a formula called the D'Hondt system, which is designed to ensure the proportion of votes cast relates roughly to the number of returned members of the Senate, MSs.
Sorry, I'm just laughing at D'Hondt. It's so childish, but in my head I thought, that is a form of techno I listen to, isn't it? I'm sure it's from Belgium. It's a bit complicated to explain in words. So we've added a link to the Senate's guide to the vote in the show notes and to the D'Hondt system too.
All of this basically can be summarised in one word, yes. That is the answer to the question. The system is designed to share the votes according to the proportion of votes in a constituency. So even if the Greens get the biggest share, any other parties that get a decent share could also return a candidate or two.
So Wayne wants to know two things. When PSUK is made into a major movie, that's very funny, which it surely will, who do you want to play you both and who do you think actually will be cast to play you?
I think that there's two answers to this question.
Okay.
Listen, it would be controversial casting, but I think Daniel Day-Lewis could pull off either part. It would involve controversial makeup.
Yes.
No one's denying that it could be deemed problematic.
Yeah.
But the guy is a chameleon. You've got to feel like he'd do his research. He'd work hard behind the scenes and he'd do a very, very eerie impression. Like, he'd do a bang-on impression of both.
Did you ever watch Split, that film with James McAvoy? It's like, it's just him, essentially, in the whole film, playing various characters.
I'm aware
characters.
Of the premise,
I mean, there's obviously an underlying ableism to the whole thing. But nonetheless, the man can do all sorts. So I would nominate him. Or, in a controversial plot twist, what if you and I played each other?
That would be a controversial casting.
Yeah, I think
it would
also ruin the relationship in many ways.
Or would it deepen it?
Yeah.
I have a very obvious actor who looks like me, to the extent that we've done stuff together based on this premise.
Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah. Jason Mantzoukas is of Greek heritage, but for some reason he came out Indian. No one can explain why that's happened. Either that or I've come out Greek. It's hard to know what's happened, but Mantzoukas and I look so alike. I think I might have said this on here before, but I was watching an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine at my grandmother's house and Jason was in it and my grandmother said, when did you film this? Like she didn't even ask if that was me. She assumed it was me and proceeded further with the second phase of the conversation.
What's Mo Salah doing at the minute? Isn't he living?
Well, he's actually leaving Liverpool, but right. I don't know if he's segueing straight into a career into acting.
Into Nish Kumar impersonation.
Either way, he's Egyptian. So yeah. I guess all of this begs the question, where is my goddamn face from?
Yeah, well, you know, race is a construct anyway. So whoever plays me...
Is there an actress that you... I can't think of one off the top of my head that people confuse you with or have said...
No one ever confuses me.
Right.
It's the only form of racism I don't get. I never get confused with like Jamila Jamil or like enter other extremely attractive South Asian woman. Never happens. So I just want whoever plays me to be buff. That's basically the long and short of it. Is that bad? They don't even need to act really.
But do you have a list of people?
Oh, could I play my mum?
What?
That would be a quite fun plot twist, wouldn't it?
You want to play Bina?
You know how Stan Lee appears in Marvel
films?
Be like that. We could appear as just the corner shop.
Well, that's quite
a
common trope in biopics. At the end of Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo DiCaprio as Jordan Belfort is giving a seminar, and it cuts to a guy looking at him and leaning in, and that is the real Jordan Belfort. So it is actually a common trope to appear in biopics.
Okay, listen, perfect.
If Julia Roberts played me in a film, I'd be thrilled. I'd be, again, racially controversial. And that's it. Thanks so much for listening to Pod Save the UK. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review. It really helps boost the show.
You can follow...
A positive review, okay? Shove your one star up your ass. Carry on.
You had such big teacher energy there. Excuse me, slow down. You can follow at Pod Save the UK.
The bell is not for you, it's for me.
If you can't play properly, no one can play, takes the football. You can follow at Pod Save the UK on Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky and X.
Pod Save the UK is a reduced listening production for Crooked Media.
Thanks to lead producer May Robson and digital producer Jacob Liebenberg.
Our theme music is by Vasilis Fotopoulos.
Our engineer is Dana Ruka and our social media producer is Nada Smiljanic.
The executive producers are Kate Fitzsimons and Katie Long, with additional support from Ari Schwartz.
And remember to hit subscribe for new shows on Thursdays on Amazon, Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.